We know you have a lot of sucky broadcasts to choose from. So thank you for listening to this sucky broadcast. And now, here's Bradley Laborman.
I haven't been on for a while, so I forgot how to do stuff. What's up, everybody? How's it going? Welcome to this sucky broadcast. It is the 17th, and I think I remembered to unmute myself, so that's good. I always have these issues. Seriously, guys, it's been a while since I've been on. I've been there's been a lot of holiday stuff going on. It's been a new year, all that good stuff. I had a bunch of health stuff going on. I started a blog. If you haven't followed along, I do have a blog. It's at bradman.tv/blog. You can watch the videos every day. I'm trying to do it Monday through Friday. Something that I used to do a long time ago with Bradman 365. I brought it back, and now I just call it the Bradman Blogs. I do it Monday through Friday, and right now it's mostly me complaining and in despair. But in a couple months, I'll laugh at that stuff and be like, that was some pretty funny content back in the day when I was suffering beyond control. But now I'm great. So I'm back on the show. I'm back here doing this sucky broadcast. I'm glad that you can be a part of this by listening in. I hope you're watching this live. If you're not watching this live, thank you for tuning in on one of the various podcasting platforms. My guest today, I discovered this guest because I listened to a radio station in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It's a radio station I found 2 days after I moved here because I saw a billboard with an old man that said, I'm back, and it's the name of the station was The Freak, and for me that was an automatic win. Like I like freaky stuff, so I tuned in and I fell in love with it. It was fantastic. They even had me come on and talk like one of the first weeks I moved here from Dallas, moved to Dallas Fort Worth area. It was fantastic. But over the holidays, their morning show was on vacation, and this gentleman, Pugs Moran, stepped in and hosted the show with his team, and I'm gonna have him on the show right now because I think he's fantastic. So welcome to this sucky broadcast.
Oh, yeah, that was so nice, Bradley. Oh my goodness, what a talk up. Hey, I gotta ask you first of all. First thing I noticed, your pre-production on the show, the voiceover. Tell me about the voiceover.
It was a guy who I found on Fiverr and I made a relationship with him. So whenever I need him for anything, I always have him come in. Like it said on the thing, what's that one guy with the mustache that, does a lot of like beef commercials and all that other stuff. You know, that guy that's like, it's what's for dinner, that guy. I don't know. He does a lot of stuff. But anyways, I'm not going to even think of his name right now. But the ad said that it was similar to that. Mm-hmm. So I originally had him come on to do, I had a movie that came out, and I had him come on to do the trailer because he had a really good like movie trailer voice. Mm-hmm. And then I had done another podcast before this one, and he had done the voices for that. I've kept the same guy. If you're good to me, and I like you and you're doing a good job, then you will always be my, I will always go back to them if they do a good job. And it's nice. I mean, I still go through Fiverr to do it, but then he'll like work out deals or whatever for me. So, and he's super fast. I'm always like originally when I started this show, yeah, it was called This Sucky Podcast. And I was doing some stuff with Real America's Voice and some other people, and there was a chance I might move the show onto like a TV station or do a radio show or something like that in the future, which was my plan. So I changed it to This Sucky Broadcast to give it more of that radio feel to it, that television feel to it. So if I did decide to like branch out, like if somebody saw this and said, this is the best show I've ever seen, I wouldn't have to do a lot of rebranding.
So first of all, you were thinking of Sam Elliott is the name you couldn't come up with.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Thank
but you very I, much. I wanted, what's his first name? What's the voiceover guy's first name? Do you know?
Why would you ask me that when I have no idea?
You don't know. Oh, you don't know. Okay.
Because I only know when I look it up.
Is what I'm telling you. I think I know him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that sounds like Dan Levy out of Chicago, who works for WGN and does freelance voiceover stuff.
I don't think it's him.
Oh, it's not? Because he's for hire. He does stuff for podcasts. So when you said you met him somewhere, and that's just when I heard it, I went, is that Dan Levy? That's what it sounds like to me.
Okay. No, I do not believe it's Dan Levy because this individual is from the West Coast somewhere. And
he's great. He's very good and very pro sound.
He's very good. Very good. I like him. He's good stuff.
Dan Levy's one of the best. So he should take that as a compliment that I thought it was Dan Levy.
I will let him know when I do go on and remember his name. I just raved about how great he was. And then you said, what's his name? And I'm like,
I know. I walked you right into that buzzsaw. I apologize, but that'll happen more.
That's okay. I do that a lot. I always talk about how great somebody is. And then they say, oh, what's her name? And I'm like, I forgot. Because I always think of them as like so-and-so's wife or so-and-so's friend. I never like think of it. Like, I just think of this guy's Fiverr guy, and I go onto the Fiverr page and I scroll down and find him and I send him a message.
I bet your cell phone is just filled with people that don't actually have names, but they have tall guy from work or, you know.
For the longest time, for the longest time, I had Wang accident in my phone because there was a guy that when I was in LA, I rear-ended somebody. Very weird story. I rear-ended this car full of people, and he got like nudged on the side. So he was like, we don't have to do insurance. We can just do this, whatever, just whatever. Because he said that because I got out of the car to check on the people in front of me if they were okay, and they were gone. And he goes, yeah, they probably didn't want the cops to be around. And I go, okay, this is Los Angeles. That makes sense. I get that. So, yeah, so that was just a weird thing that I knew it was my fault. I did the accident, and then somehow I got out of it because they ran away. And I was like, oh, cool. Bonus, I guess. Nobody got hurt. That's all that matters. So, and it was a crappy car, and I ended up getting a better car out of the deal. So it's all good. Anyways, so Pugs, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. I am sure that people watching this know all about you and all this stuff, or people that will discover this will know all about you. And if you've shared this with anybody, they'll know about you, but I don't know about you. So I'm interested to learn more about you.
So you're just gonna allow me to just talk about myself, which is really my favorite thing in the world to do.
I figured that was. So I would like you to just a quick brief history about yourself.
Okay. What do you want? What do you want? Well, I'll tell you what. Okay. So I was born on the south side of Chicago on July 20th, 1969, the day we landed on the moon. That's right. I'm a moon baby.
Oh, wow.
To this day, my mother blames me for the fact that she claims to be the only woman of her generation to have missed the moon landing because she was busy with me.
And it was a great performance, too.
I grew up in Chicago. I worked in Chicago radio. I went to college in Chicago. I began in radio on Groundhog's Day 1992 at WLUP, The Loop in Chicago, which was a station. It was my favorite station growing up, and it was a station that I pursued. I began as a caller. And then I went through, you know, journalism school and radio school, and I was still a caller. And then finally I took an internship there and I worked my way up to having my own show. I left that station and went to an alternative rock station where I was in mornings. This is all before 2000. Switched to a third station in Chicago to launch a talk show with my partner, Kelly Moore. And it was that talk show that was moved from Chicago. Started in 98 in Chicago. It was moved in 2001 to Dallas. And we stayed here in middays on Live 105.3 in Dallas until 2015, I think. Okay. That's when we moved on.
And that's the first fascinating thing. Because I started in radio too. I mean, I started in theater, hypothetically, but I quickly moved over to radio. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that was fascinating to me because you had mentioned that you started out in Chicago and they just moved the show.
Well, so, it was the FM talk thing. What was happening was the station that I'd started out in Chicago, 97.9 The Loop, that is ground zero for what is FM talk or hot talk. It was the first station in America that was, you know, billing $20 million a year in 1992, doing nothing but morning shows. The midday show was a morning show. The afternoon show was a morning show, you know. Okay. And it was the genius of a guy by the name of Jimmy DeCastro who just decided, he said, I've got the number one morning show in the city. What if I went and got the number two one too? And then hell, while I'm there, why not get the number three? And they built a behemoth of a station. And that's the station that I was lucky enough to learn everything about radio at. And after about, you know, 15 years of having unbelievable success, those kinds of successful stations turn on each other and they begin to cannibalize each other and people move on for bigger paychecks, even though everybody was making $5 million a year. And you got a midday show host making $5 million a year in Chicago in 1995. Yeah, it was crazy. It was, these were the early days of, right? This is not what radio is now, but this is what that was. So anyway, that station, CBS Radio, decided that they were going to steal that concept, and they were not only going to steal it nationally, because they had this guy named Howard Stern who kind of fit into that loop style talk, but Chicago was the only city that Howard Stern couldn't get a headway in. He had dominated LA, Philadelphia, New York. He had failed six times in Chicago on six different stations, and it was because of the loop. The loop was already there, and the loop had poisoned the well effectively against Howard long before he got here. So the loop listeners, the people who would be Howard listeners, already hated him because, you know, he was. So anyway, CBS Radio looked at that format and they decided, well, why don't we just create that format ourselves on a national level? We'll anchor it with Howard Stern and we'll call it FM talk, which would eventually become Free FM, which would eventually become dead. But that's what it was. So when they when they created one of the first stations, they had, they had the one in Chicago, which was WCKG. They had New York, which was Stern State. Or no, it was NEW was New York, I believe.
Yeah.
And then KLSX in LA. And those three out of the box made crap tons of money. And CBS said, all right, let's expand. So they wanted to come to Dallas next. But they didn't really have, they didn't really have anybody. They'd have Howard in mornings. And then they would have this local guy, Russ Martin, who was another local morning show star. They would have him in afternoons, but, you know, Howard wasn't in market and Russ was just going to do whatever he was going to do. So CBS decided, and after this is, it's more complicated, but we were moved down here basically to be a part of this station because we knew what the format was supposed to be. We knew, we understood.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah.
Okay, there's, well, trust me, there's way more to it. There's a lawsuit involved. So
you can, well, and what's interesting is you're saying what year was this? Like, because here's the deal. Like, I grew up in Iowa. Like, I'm originally from Iowa, right? So I went to school in this like tiny little Storm Lake, Iowa city, whatever. It was by Sioux City or whatever. And my earliest radio experience, other than like the talk morning show that was on the radio station there in my small town at Mount Pleasant, Iowa, was I started listening to these guys, Don and Mike.
Sure.
And loved Don and Mike. Started listening to Don and Mike, fell in love with Don and Mike. When I moved to Iowa City, Iowa, I had moved there to do theater. There was a professional theater in the Amana colonies that I worked at for a very long time. And then I moved over because I had the fortunate thing in college to be one of the first people to do digital editing. So I came out of college knowing how to do digital editing, and it gave me a great advantage. And this public access station in Iowa said, we need somebody to, who knows how to do digital editing. So I started working for them and doing their promotional stuff, all their marketing, and started listening to a radio station in Iowa City called KCJJ. And this station ran the Donna Mike show. That's why I started listening to them. And I started listening to the morning show. I went in, started doing some marketing for public
access. What year is this? What year are we talking
about? This would have been 90. It would have been 2000. It would have been 2000 was when I started working at public access. I started listening, and I've been listening to the radio. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go in and let's work with this radio station and market public access, because we had some fun and interesting stuff. Started going on the show once a week, and the owner said, "Hey, do you want to do a show? Do you want to come over here and start doing a show with us?" Sure. And so he gave me a midday slot, and then the plan was, he was in the morning, I would do middays, and then Don and Mike in the afternoons. And then there for a while, Don and Mike switched over to middays, and I had to do afternoons. So I did the midday zoo, is what I call, and then it went to the afternoon zoo, and then went back to the midday zoo. But that was my radio experience. But during that time, I had a lot of physical, visual humor. So I reached out to Public Access, and I said, I'd like to do like a Conan show, like a talk show. And they said, you can do like any night if you want to, but we usually reserve those for live music. And I said, oh, I'll bring on bands, and I'll do like a live talk show, and I'll bring on bands, and I'll highlight Iowa City bands and all stuff. I did that show for 8 years.
Wow. And
I did that show from 2002. Well,
I bet it was a blast. That sounds like
it was great. It was great. There were so many people that would come in and be like, but I had a guy that came in that started to be like the director for the show, and he'd be like, okay, here's the layout for the show this week. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't. We would just turn on the phones, because it's public access, so you didn't have to like dump anything. Yeah. So we would just turn on the phones, and the callers would steer the conversation. And then there was like a year where somebody made a comment like, oh, this show couldn't survive without callers. So then I just turned off calls for a year and said, okay, no, watch, I'll do the show without calls. And we did it, no problem. And I had a keyboard guy, and bands would come in. It was great. But then it got more popular than the radio show. So the guy fired me from the radio station. There was a bunch of stuff. Anyways, I'm here now because of public access. So, And that was my thing. But it was interesting because I'm here because I used to listen to Don and Mike, and I guess that timeline kind of matches up, because I felt like when I heard Don and Mike, I felt like talk radio, like those shows have been on forever. So what you're saying is that format really wasn't a big thing.
No, that format, the style of talk radio that isn't dependent on politics or strictly sports, right, has been called a lot of things over the years. It was done at its highest form in Chicago, beginning in the early 80s, the station, okay, The Loop. And that station ran successfully all the way till about 2000, when it finally imploded. And again, imploded because of too much success, because you can't have someone doing 6 to midnight who's making $2 million a year.
right, yeah.
You can't have that. Yeah. Anyway, it was just, it imploded. Everybody got too big, and they started turning on each other, and it stopped being this incredible frat house, and it, you know. But yeah, so it started with two guys named, I would give credit to Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer. Those would be the two people that
Steve
you would.
Steve Dahl?
Yeah.
Great guy. Steve, I know Steve Dahl because there's a Steve Dahl joke in my movie. And I emailed him and said, can I put this joke in the movie and make a reference to you in this movie? It's about Disco Demolition. Uh-huh. And I emailed him on his website. Literally 5 minutes later, he emailed me back and said, go ahead. You're free to go. So I think he's great. Fantastic.
Well, Steve and I have a long and complicated history, but I will say this. I absolutely agree with you. Okay. Steve is a great guy.
Listen, if you don't like him, it's okay.
No. Look, okay. Wait a second. Hold on. Since we're going to talk about this, we will talk about this, and that is fine. Okay. Steve Dahl is the reason that I do what I do. He was my hero as a kid growing up, and my earliest shows in Chicago radio was in the early days of message boards, and a lot of people would say things on those message boards like, hey, doesn't Pug sound like a younger, cooler Steve? You know, not awesome, because, you know, Steve doesn't want to hear that. Steve Dahl, you know, and I get it now. At the time, I didn't. At the time, I was like you. I was like, yeah, I am that old man, that old son of a bitch. Like, I'm turning on my mentor, right? Because suddenly there's this little drip of fame, and I'm gonna sell out somebody that basically shaped me. So yeah, I was imitating Steve, but I wasn't ripping him off. I was imitating him because he was the guy that I listened to that made me think I could do it. It wasn't until I came to Dallas that I finally found my own voice, but I love Steve. Steve, I think, is the greatest purveyor of this style of talk that there has ever been. And one thing that people don't realize, Steve Dahl and Howard Stern have a very complicated and long history as well, although I understand that these days they are friends. In the movie Private Parts, when Stern goes to Detroit, the very earliest one, when he goes, I think he goes from Hartford to Detroit. In Private Parts, he goes, or in Washington, no, it was Detroit to Washington. Anyway, he goes to Detroit, and he is he's told, you know, the guy you're replacing is this. And that. The guy he was replacing was Steve Dahl. Steve Dahl had gone from Detroit to Chicago to create the Loop. That's when Steve started the Loop. But Steve had burned Detroit down, no pun intended. He was like as big as it got there. And so when Howard came, and Howard wasn't nobody. Howard wasn't anybody. They said, this is the guy you got to be like. So Howard got his whole start in the whole shock and provocateur and really touch on it in the movie. In the book they do. They don't really so much in the movie. But yeah, so Steve's the original. Steve is the original of this, and
I love him. I am honestly going to say though, I wasn't aware of Steve Dahl until I moved to Chicago. I guess that's not true. I knew about Steve Dahl because I knew about
Disco Demolition.
Disco Demolition. Everybody knew about Disco Demolition. So when I moved to Chicago, I learned more about him, and then that's when somebody said you should get a hold of him because you should make this joke.
He's also, by the way, this needs to be pointed out too. I don't know if this is a badge of honor or not, but he is the very first person to be labeled a shock jock. He was labeled a shock jock back in 1978 in the Chicago Sun-Times. I believe it was by Robert Feeder. It's the first time that phrase was used.
That's a huge badge of honor.
Yeah, I think so.
I've spent my entire life trying to be shocking. And there's numerous times I kind of calmed down a lot, but when I did the public access show, my whole idea was like, no, there's no such thing as bad publicity. And we were doing things like we would have March Hottie Madness where I went to a tanning salon, I had a sign up sheet, and I just had girls sign up for a bracket, and then you just had to vote on who was hotter. That was the whole concept of the thing. And I even put twins in the same bracket just to do stuff like that, just to mess with people. Be like, so then you had to choose which twin was hotter or whatever. And then and I've just been talking about this because somebody brought it up the other day. I actually posted it on Facebook. In 2006, April 13th, there was a tornado in Iowa City. And everybody got shut down. And I was the only thing live. So I turned into like this hub for information for Iowa City. And like they ended up, there was a moment where I was going to get like some sort of like Citizen of the Year award, some sort of key to the city, like all this stuff that was going on. They wrote articles about me. All the footage that like CNN and Fox and everybody was running was all my footage because I had public access people going out with cameras and just taking video and like bringing it all back. But I got on the next week and I was like, you guys realize, like everybody was talking about how great the show was. People would come up to me, whatever. And I was like, okay, but you guys realize, like we were going to have girls wrestle in Lucky Charms to determine the winner of this contest. Like I canceled that, but we're going to go back to that. So we're not going to change anything. But then there was the longest period of time where I said to the people on the show, I was like, we're at a point where everybody loves us, but I wanted everybody to love us because we were shocking, and now everybody just loves us because we did something good. I was like, I feel like we could crap in the street in downtown Iowa City and nobody would care because it was like, because we did this amazing thing. So but that's when I started to be like, oh, maybe I don't have to be so shocking. Maybe I can just be entertaining. So,
well, by the way, before we get too far downfield, we were talking about Steve Dahl.
Right.
We have to mention Gary Meyer. He had a partner. It was Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer. And Gary Meyer is one of the funniest SOBs I've ever heard on radio. And I just want to make sure that should anybody ever hear this, they know that I appreciate both of them.
And it's weird because I know who Gary Meyer was before I knew who Steve Dahl was.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So I don't know how I knew that, but I just knew who Gary Meyer was. So
the subject of shock, if you wanted to talk a little bit about shock radio, since now you got me thinking about it. I was always associated tangentially, I suppose, with shock jocks, big shock jocks. The stations I worked at, which I my show followed Howard Stern. Howard Stern was a shock jock. It was on before Russ Martin. Russ Martin was a shock jock. Came from a station in Chicago that was considered the shock jock station. A lot of people, provocateur, there's a difference between a shock jock and a provocateur. And I think that that distinction needs to be made, because I don't believe that there is a place in society in 2024 for a shock jock. But I do think there is a place for a provocateur. And I guess, what is the difference there? The difference is gratuity. The difference is that the shock jock is just doing it for no value, no nothing, just I want to freak people out. The provocateur, yeah, I believe, if done properly, especially in the spoken word or talk format, the provocateur is challenging you to think about things that either make you uncomfortable or things that you thought you already knew. So I am not a big fan of the format of shock jockery. I think that it peaked in the 1990s, and then I think it was like a dead horse being beaten for about 15 years after that. And every talentless former morning show music jock, you know, got their chance, and they all tried to do some derivative form of shock jockery, and it's awful. And the good ones I consider provocateurs. So I never considered myself and my partner's show to be a shock jock show, even though we were sandwiched between. We were seen by the corporation as the safe show that could exist where advertisers could go because we weren't Howard Stern or the afternoon. But so that's my thoughts on shock.
So would your definition be more of shock jocks say whatever they want because they don't care what they're saying just to get a rise out of somebody, where a provocateur says what they feel?
A provocateur has a point to it. There's a point. That's the easiest way for me to see. Yeah, the provocateur has a point to what he's doing. The emotion that he's
doing. But my other comment would be like, a provocateur would say something, but they believe it. Like a shock jock can say something and not believe it just to get a rise out of something.
No, they don't necessarily have to believe it. But the point is, the provocateur is trying to get you to think a different way. The provocateur is openly challenging what you think. Whereas a shock jock is just going for, I believe, you know, easy laughs, low hanging fruit, punching down. You know, hey, look at this fat chick. Yeah. Whereas a provocateur, here's the difference. Okay, a shock jock goes, hey, look at the fat chick. Ha ha ha. A provocateur speaks to her and talks to her about her unhealthy diet. That's a whole different kind of way of having uncomfortable conversations without necessarily just being so gratuitous.
Right. Good. I feel like I did evolve because in my early, when I was first doing my show when I first started doing public access, I was just doing lowest common denominator. And one day I said, why are we just doing lowest common denominator stuff? Let's like do funny parodies and things like that. And it fortunately, that was also the same time that this channel called YouTube came out.
Oh boy.
And I remember I was like, we have a whole show that we can put on YouTube. I had to fax in an application to YouTube.
Oh, the olden days.
Because they were like, because you can only put like 5 minutes on at a time. And they said, if you apply and you get accepted, you can put on unlimited video or whatever. And so we applied and they accepted us and we got the show onto YouTube. And then live streaming started happening and I was one of the first. I was one of the pioneers of live streaming. I love to brag about that. I love to brag about.
You should.
There was a time when it was just Tom Green and me, and we were the ones doing live streaming, and that was early. That's some of my proudest moments. So
it should be. That's a big deal. You've been on this for a while.
Yeah, but I think that if I want to thank radio, because radio opened the door, and now I'm doing podcasting, and that's essentially just going back to doing radio. And I think I got inspired by that because when Don and Mike split up, Mike O'Mara started to do the Mike O'Mara show, and then he kind of swung over to a podcast format. And from there, I was like, oh, wait, I could do my radio show and just do it as a podcast. And so I just started doing it that way. So
tell you, that's something else we've seen over the past 10, 15 years is there used to be an attitude among radio personalities where if somebody else in radio had lost their job or something, a radio host on the air would go, "All right, have fun podcasting, loser." Right. It was like this real sort of patronizing attitude towards podcasting. Yeah. Now every single one of those dudes are out of work, and you know they're
doing and all the radio stations are podcasting. Like yeah. All the radio stations are taking their live shows and then moving them over to podcasting.
Well, so. There is no this people. Well, yeah, this is a radio show, not a podcast. Look, that is so stupid. What we were talking about, a terrestrial broadcast that is done live, and a podcast. What are we? We're talking about means of distribution. That's all. Yeah. It's still it's a piece of creative content designed to be entertaining and commodified. Okay, yeah. That's
I call this a podcast, but for me, it's a live stream.
Yeah, it's a show.
It's a web show, and then it becomes a podcast.
Yes, so. If some people want to use it that way and listen to it in their car off of, you know, with Sketcher or whatever it is that you're using, right. Fine. Other people, maybe you can see it on YouTube. See, it doesn't. This is a show. You're doing a show. How we commodify these new forms of media is the question.
Right. Exactly. Oh, you also reminded me I am doing a show and I need to open up my advertisers because I have to read a sponsor thing in a little bit. Thanks for reminding me because I was so busy getting stuff organized. Yeah, I got to make sure that I got to give a shout out to my advertisers. So I will open that up in a second as soon as I figure out where the heck that screen is. Someplace around here. Oh, here it is. I found it. I got to move it over here, though, so it's not in the screen. So we're broadcasting right now. We are all over the place. We are on Facebook. We are on YouTube. We are on Twitch. We are on Twitter. We're even on Getter, which is more of a political site.
You made that one up.
I did make that one up. We're also on TikTok, so welcome over if you're watching us on TikTok. But I got to say this real quick. I want to thank the Brass Tap. The Brass Tap, you probably know the Brass Tap. You've probably been to the Brass Tap before. I will tell you something. You're going to find out something, and it's going to be useful information. The Brass Tap offers over 150 craft beers from around the globe in an upscale neighborhood bar atmosphere. They carry almost every craft beer from almost all the Texas breweries, from Rollertown Beer Works to Tupps to Peticola's Brewing, and you can always count on them to deliver the craft beers you're looking for. They also carry craft beers from other states and even craft beers that were brewed by monks from overseas. They offer weekly events with pint nights, music bingo every Wednesday at 7 p.m., family feud or theme trivia every Thursday at 7 p.m., and a new local music artist every Saturday night. And they also have one of the longest running happy hours in all the DFW area with select $5 draft discount shots, $5 drafts discounted shots, $6 wines, $7 special drinks of the week, along with food specials under $10. Sporting events, all that great stuff. Let me tell you about the locations that sponsor us, because not every Brass Tap sponsors us. We're working on that.
What?
But right now, Allen, Prosper, Sachi, I just moved here.
Sorry. Let me help you out. I've been in the market a little while. Saxy,
thank you so much. I've been pronouncing that wrong this entire time. Richardson and Frisco. And also Richardson and Frisco also features Old World Pizza made to order. And you can only get that pizza in the Frisco and Richardson locations. And people are raving about it. But here's the number one thing. If you mention the podcast, if you mention the Sucky Podcast at any of those locations, you get, you can pick your own appetizer. Free appetizer. Just by mentioning the podcast, by going, "Hey, I heard about you on the Sucky Podcast broadcast." That's what you have to say.
That's a real thing, or are you just saying that?
No, that's a real thing at the Brass Tap in the North DFW locations.
Such a great deal! I just had to ask.
It's a real thing. Swear. People think I'm making it up, but nope, it's real.
So what is that? That's like a live read? You just did like a live read there for a place that I'm familiar with that I also enjoy. Look at you.
Yeah. When I first started doing the broadcast, I wanted to make sure that I was focusing on local.
Yeah.
I'm branching out now because I've gotten some national spots coming up in the future.
Here's the thing. Just a little couple director's notes, okay? Okay. You're a theater guy. You get this. you don't need to. You don't need to put out there that there are monks shipping weird.
They wanted me to put that out there. That's them telling me to do that. Haven't you had the monk beer at the breast tap?
What? No. What are you telling me? It comes from like some like mountain village in the old country, and they send it here and sell it in Richardson.
Yeah, I'm assuming Tibetan monks probably. That's usually what it is. It's always the Tibetan monks.
What like kind of quality control could we possibly be dealing with here?
I think there's a lot of control because we're talking about monks that are probably celibate and don't talk. So that's a lot of control. Yeah. That's a lot of self-restraint. So I trust them with brewing beer.
Here's what
I don't feel like we're hurting their feelings because they're not listening to this.
The point I want to make. That place is awesome. Their food is really good, and they've got just about any kind of beer that you want. Just stay away from the weird one that might contain, you know, monk sweat or something like that. I don't know what's.
Maybe that's what makes it better, though. Maybe. What if monk sweat is the secret ingredient, the holiest of ingredients?
Well, then they're on to something. That's a reason to go to the Brass Tap.
Well, the real reason to go to the Brass Tap is because of all the great stuff, but also because you can save this sucky broadcast and get a free appetizer. And that right there is worth it. Limit one per table, I believe. Don't like go in as a group of four and everybody say, sucky broadcast, and see if they give you four things of tater tots or whatever. I haven't been there in a while. I haven't checked out the new menu in a while. But I do want to try some of that pizza. So there's that. What are you doing? So you do your show, right? You have a show that you do on Monday through Friday on live streaming during the noon hour.
I work with a platform out of Chicago that my good friend Ed Silla started called Radio Misfits, and it produces and promotes and markets and does all of that for podcasters, and he's. Essentially, the name Radio Misfits is because the idea was that a lot of radio people were being laid off, and you get laid off on a Friday. They all want to be on the air on Monday to tell their listeners what happened. So Ed created this thing called Radio Misfits that catered originally to recently out of work talk show hosts and radio personalities.
Hello, Ed. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, no, we've been doing that for Ed. I'll introduce Brett. No, he's very successful. He's got a lot of big names. If you're a Chicago radio fan, you know, you'll know a lot of the people that are on there. But so I've been doing that. I stopped doing radio around 2015. The last time I did any radio was I did fill in at WGN. They did a sports little thing there. I did that in Chicago, but I moved back to Chicago and I started working in other things, branding and product and content creation and all that. Worked for a branding agency. You'll like this. Worked for a branding agency that got really big in the convention business. We were creating. You ever go to a convention and they have these different rooms where people are giving their speeches and nobody wants to go to those damn speeches because they're hungover from the party in the bar the night before? But what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time.
I'm constantly doing that.
So we started pitching the associations. Actually, Brian, my friend at that point, Brian created this thing where he just pitched all these associations and said, what if you just let us live stream your meetings so that people who don't want to come down and are in the meetings, they can stay in their room. They can still be at the convention. And it became very successful. And we're really enjoying that. And then the pandemic hit and shut down every convention in America for 2 years. So
yeah, but I feel like that helped because like I remember VidCon went viral. VidCon was one of the main ones that I would always go to for the longest time. And during the pandemic, they went to live streaming. They said we're going to be free and we're going to stream the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
It was just not happening.
So I moved back here to Dallas. I had moved back home to Chicago for about 5 years, and then I'd moved back here. I got a 14-year-old son here. I was getting really tired of FaceTime and all of that. And now I'm working on a number of different projects still with Radio Misfits and all that, and just kind of kicking around.
Awesome. That's great. That's fantastic. I love that. I mean, I'm glad I heard about you. I mean, I feel like I was at a disadvantage because when you came on and you substituted for the speakeasy, I mean for the downbeat in the morning on. Sorry. They switched around titles at one point, so I'm still regrouping for that. But when you substituted for the downbeat and you came on, I was very excited. I liked your energy a lot. It was a very uplifting show, and I liked listening to it. I like everybody on it.
Well, now all of those people that were on that show. So this is like you don't know anything. So for you, that random strangers. So Sybil, who I did the show with, Sybil was the executive producer of the show that I had here in town for a bunch of years. My partner was a girl named Kelly Moore. Kelly Moore lives in Corpus Christi. She wasn't available. Sybil has gone on to be a personality in this town on her own. And so she came in, she did it with me. So it was Pugs and Sybil. Lacey was one of our producers from that show back then. And he is just a man about town, a bon vivant, a raconteur. He's just.
I enjoy having conversations on Messenger with him. So
he's a good man.
Somebody
that you need to invite on and talk to. Now that's the guy. He's a very successful artist, and you just crack that can of worms open, and you'll find.
Oh, yeah,
I call him the world's most interesting man.
I definitely want to have him on. And then the joke during when you were taking over for the freak, I was Lacey had made a comment about wanting just going on a date with a random person, so I said, I'll go out on a date with her. I haven't went on a date in a long time. I'll go out on a date. And I've made this whole like thing in the chat and on the Facebook page and all stuff. But then I realized I'm still pursuing that. But by the way, I haven't Lacey, if you're listening to this, whatever. I have no reason to give up on that. But I realized. So there was a brief period of my life. Well, it's still there. Cause I'm still doing it. I had a website in 2009, 2010 called I Dump For You, where I would call people and I would break up with them for other people. And it came out, and literally 2 weeks later, well, the day it came out, we were on the front page of Dig. Remember Dig back in the day? I was one of these people that had 5 videos on the front page of Dig at the same time. I was very proud of that time of my life. But I did a lot of radio promotion. I did a lot of TV interviews. I was the Today Show, Dr. Phil, Rachel Ray, all stuff. But I was on, I did the Kid Craddock show. When, rest his soul, I loved Kid Craddock. And I was very excited about that because I was living in Iowa. I was in Iowa at the time still. And he was syndicated out of Burlington, Iowa. So I listened to him. I listened to him all the time. And was really excited to do the show. And I would always say, I will never do a fake breakup or anything like that, because that all the radio guys were like, yeah, call in, we'll have a caller come in, we'll do a fake breakup or whatever. Like, no, I was like, no, I don't want to do that because I'm really trying to help people. I was just really like doing stuff and like,
yeah, you're not
really
trying this to be a comedian or a joke. Yeah.
It ended up coming off that way. But anyways, but I remember, and I'm positive this was her. I remember, and I know that afterwards they weren't together, but one of the hosts or somebody was like, well, can you just do this? And it was Kid. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it for you because I love you so much. And he was like, we're going to call his girlfriend and I want you to fake break up with her. And I believe it was Lacey. And now that I think about it, now that I go back through the whole thing in my head, I'm like, I feel like that's who it was back in the day. That it was a fake breakup. So, but whatever is a joke thing. But
an icebreaker with her. That's
I haven't brought that up yet. But I did. You're right. I thought about it the other day, and the more I think about it, the more I think that was actually because I know she was on the show. I know she was part of the show. So for a long time. So
yeah. So. But how long? How far back are you going? Because what year are you talking? So I think she started over there about 2010.
Yeah, so my website started in 2010.
Oh, okay.
And I believe, I'll put it this way. I believe I did an interview with him, and then it was shortly after that he passed away. Like, I feel like it was, like, around that time, and I always hold that interview very special because of that. But it was around that time. It was like 2010, 2011. So, and it was, and for me, it was like, I don't want to say it was, because at that time I was doing like Today's Show and Dr. Phil and stuff like that. And then it was like, hey, you want to do Kid Craddock? And I'm like, yeah, I want to do, that's what I want to do more than these other shows.
I bet you Kid Craddock had a bigger audience than those two things you mentioned. Oh,
totally.
Yeah,
totally.
So don't downgrade and, Kid Craddock back in the day. That dude was a behemoth.
It was so amazing. Just so, yeah. And it was such a fun show and everything. So I was very happy that I got to be a part of that. And then I also had a bad experience with Man Cow.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I hung up on Man Cow. He goes,
he's a jerk.
His production team edited stuff because there was a lot of swearing and stuff like that. So he took one of the videos, he edited it, chopped it up and all this stuff. And they played it as an intro for me to come on. And he was like, yeah, that sounds fake. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, bye. And I was like, what am I supposed to say? Because if you're just going to make the comments that my stuff is fake, then I don't want to be a part of the
show.
Well,
let me tell you something. I think maybe you took it the wrong way, because when Man Cow tells you that something is fake, there isn't someone on this planet who knows more about fake bullshit than Man Cow. So that you should have taken that as a compliment.
I wanted to be edgy though and be the guy that hung up on Man Cow. So and then somebody did. One of my friends called me and said, oh my God, you hung up on Man Cow. And I go, yeah, I did.
Let me give you an example. Let me give you a Man Cow story really quick if you got one.
Okay.
So when Man Cow first came to Chicago, he was brought from San Francisco, and we were the number one morning show in town. We were the morning show, Kevin Matthews on the loop. So there was a hallway, and there was our studio, and then there was a studio on the other side of the hallway, and that was 103.5, and that's the station where Man Cow came. And so our studio doors, our morning show doors, opened up to his from the day that he first arrived. He was always a jerk. It was always a bad attitude. It was always him screwing with us. But I remember he got some big national attention very early on. This was probably within the first 6 months of him coming to Chicago. And there was somebody who was going to jump off a bridge, and Man Cow spent like 2 hours on the air talking to this person on this bridge. And, you know, don't jump, man. Look, are you a man of faith? Will you pray with me? You know, doing all of this stuff. No, don't tell me to take a commercial break. We'll stay it on the air. You know, he's doing this whole thing. It was a producer in another studio. It was a radio bit. It was a stunt.
What?
So what he did was he exploited the concept of somebody standing on a bridge having a difficult moment and obviously a mental breakdown, and he just exploited that whole concept. And to make it even skeevier, he made himself the hero. It's just so gross. And if you could do that, I was so disgusted by that. I went home, I almost cried in my car on the way home, because I thought, Jesus, this is just an uneven playing field. If we're out here every day trying to create real, authentic talk radio, connective, relatable talk radio, and then we got this guy across the hall just making stuff up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not fair, man. It was very discouraging. No. I've battled that my whole career. I have no regard for radio personalities who use script.
Well, I never knew that story. That was insane. That, you know what? Then that's funny, because somebody... some guy the other day, I was talking about how nobody really checks in my live streams anymore lately or whatever like that. And this guy who acts like he's an expert on everything goes and goes, well, that's because you got a script, that you got to have a script ready, you got to schedule and stuff. I go, I'm not going to script, dude. I'm like, if I want to do a script, then I'll go act in a movie or do one of those things that I usually do. If I want to just talk about myself, and that's been ever since Public Access, it's just been like, I'm just going to talk about whatever I want to talk about and let it flow, whatever
right,
the natural
flow is. But you have a
is.
Plan. I mean, you have to have a plan, and you have to have an outline and bullet points, and you have to know what you're going to do.
I don't. I say, Pugs is coming on. Let's go. And that's the extent of my plan.
But you told me how long you expect this to take, and you told me the things you're going to talk. So you did have some kind of plan. What I mean is, when you say today we're going to talk to a child molester, stay tuned, you know, and then people are all excited, they tune in, and then it's just an improv actor that you've got.
Yeah, pretending to be a child. Gross.
That's gross. That is gross. And it's gross because the real joy of doing this, doing talk radio, which is what I love, the real joy of this is to have the moment where you authentically connect with some stranger, where you said something about, you know, oh, my mom did, or whatever it could be, you know, anything, you know, just whatever connects you to them. Those are what you work for. You work hard to be compelling. If you just fake it and you create, you know, fabricated compelling content, that hurts my soul. I mean, it just hurts my soul because you've made a connection. You've tricked somebody. They were connected to you listening, thinking they were having this moment and you were doing this compelling content, and it was all a fraud. And I just think that's gross. And I think that's a reason that a lot of spoken word radio doesn't work anymore. Why we only have two formats, political talk and sports.
I get it. That's why game shows don't work either, because I found out that I went on Let's Make a Deal, and I worked really hard, and when I lived in LA, I showed up every single day and then got on my birthday, that the show didn't air till like 6 months later. And then 3 months later, my friend was on, and I was like, oh man, how'd you get on? And she goes, my agent booked me. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I could have had an agent book me this whole time. And that was, I think my biggest thing was when I was doing I Dump for You, there was a battle between True TV and MTV about who's going to get the show. It ended up getting shelved for Impractical Jokers. Impractical Jokers came out the same time as I did, and the rest is history. But I ended up with True TV, and True TV was like, we want you on this show because we just want you, we like your humor, and we want you to be on World's Dumbest. And I'm like, that's great, because my dad loves the show World's Dumbest, and that's what I want to do. I just want to sit around and be like, what do you think, Tonya Harding? And just like talk about like, what did Danny Bonaduce think of that? Like stuff like that. But when I remember going to the meeting and coming from Iowa and still under the mindset that everything was like, I knew some stuff was fake, but with the idea that there was real stuff. And I remember just being so disheartened when they said, okay, I'm sitting in the True TV meeting and the suits are there and they go, okay, Bradley, a guy getting his car towed and crying, that's good television. But a guy dressed in a chicken suit crying while his car is getting towed, that's True TV. And they said, what is your chicken suit? And that's when I realized they were going to take old calls that I had done and redo them and have me recall them with an actor, like redo the calls and improv. And I improv and I get it, whatever. And they were like, because I came in saying, I want to do this show where I go to like the stadium and we dress in disguise and we break up with somebody and everybody around him is an actor and his girlfriend gives him tickets to go to the game and then we break up like that. And they're like, no, that costs too much money. We're just going to animate these breakups. And that's what they did. They ended up doing animating things. So, and it was fine. Cause I was at the time I was like, I really like the animator from College Humor. Can you give me the animator from College Humor? And then they got me the animator from College Humor and I felt really powerful. But and like I said, it got shelved, whatever. I got money. I went home. I went back to Iowa for a while and ran a children's theater with that money. And that was great. But it was the moment when, like, I realized, like, I was in New York City, and one day they said, hey, do you want to meet me? My friend was like, come with me. I'm going to be on Cash Cab. And that's when I found out that they just planted people around the city. You had to take a test first, but they planted people around the city, and he would drive around, and Cash Cab was fake. When I found out Cash Cab was fake, that's when it really hurt the most for me was because then also I was doing stand-up at the time, and the host from Cash App, he was just there doing stand-up one day. He was at an open mic doing stand-up. It was just weird.
What do you mean? Stuff. You're not a cab driver?
Yeah. It's like, well, I feel like this is all, I'm getting robbed on all this stuff. It was just a very interesting time. And yeah, I held a grudge against the True TV guys for a while, because what happened was our shows came out. We had pilot episodes of our shows. And then Conan was on TBS. At that exact same... Conan came out on TBS, okay? So after Conan, they didn't have anything to run after Conan. So they just put on the episode of Impractical Jokers. They could have put on my show as the end, but I will stand by the fact that Impractical Jokers got famous because they just tagged it on the end of Conan when Conan was on TBS, when he first started on TBS, and they didn't have anything after him. And then they started, and then all of a sudden, boom, because I had never seen Impractical Jokers before that time. So, sorry, my body alarm's going off. Oh, it's medication, so.
I've never seen Impractical Jokers, so don't feel bad.
Oh, really? You know what? No, I watch it now, and I think it's great. And but at the same time, I don't believe it's real because of the fact that I
don't believe any of that's real. So
I don't believe any of that's real. And I had a friend who worked on the Carbonaro project or something like that, where the guy's a magician and he does like weird things. And I was convinced he was a writer on the show, but I was still convinced most of it was legitimate. And then literally on Facebook, this guy posted and said, "Here's me on last year's Carbonaro project acting like I don't know what I'm doing." Like, and I was just like, "Oh my God, is nothing real?" I mean, I want to be on, I would love to be on The Amazing Race, but I don't know if it's real. I mean, I guess I don't care. I mean, and I think what their logic is, they say, and this is what was fed to me a lot, was on the East Coast, on the West Coast, when we were making stuff, they were like, "We only make this stuff for the people in the flyover states because they think we believe anything that we," but the times have changed because the internet has really opened up. I think before the internet, I think there was a lot of stuff people believed.
Well, there was, but it's not that absolute. People don't care. Everybody now knows that on some level, what they're seeing with The Real Housewives or what they're seeing with, you know, The Bachelor or whatever is a script. It's all
meant. Real Housewives.
They don't care.
Real Housewives. I when I first moved to New York and I was doing my television show, my mother was like, "Please get a regular job so you have a backup job." So I started doing social media for this group called The Black Group, and they did nightclub events, and they worked with this pop-up group called City Pond, which was in the winter, Bryant Park would put a big ice skating rink, there'd be a restaurant and all stuff. And one of the days, the cast from Real Housewives came over.
Well, which one? What do you mean?
The Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Okay.
There's a blonde woman. There was a blonde woman. There was a brunette
woman. They're my favorites. Just so you know, the New Jersey cast is my favorite.
Everybody was getting along. Cameras turned on. Then all of a sudden there was drama. There was a fight, and I was like, "Oh, there we go." And the same thing with when True TV would send me to parties and stuff like that. I had to ride along with the girls from the Bad Girls Club, and nicest girls you would ever saw. Like the nicest people. They were nothing like they were on TV. They were just like, it was all acting.
Well, okay. So the situations that they're put in are staged. They're put in situations where they are then forced to behave. Okay. And or not behave, whatever the case is. So they cast unbearably bad people. Like that's what I loved about The Real Housewives of New Jersey. When you mentioned that one, I can tell you all about them gals. Those people suck. Those people are just bad people. They're dumb, vain, shallow, poorly educated, wildly misinformed idiots. And they're attractive. And here's what they do. They put them in situations. They create situations. You girls are all in a book club now, even though none of them have ever read a book, but now they're in a book club. Like, all right, you're in a book club now. Oh, and you know Cynthia's sister-in-law, who you guys hate? Yeah. She's now in the book club. And go. That's what they do. Film it.
Yep.
And then they pour copious amounts of wine down their gullets. So now you have these horrible people with buzzes and, you know, let the cameras get it. That's why I love The Real Housewives. I believe that they are slightly different than when I think of all the other reality shows, because they're just bad people put in tough situations and then alcohol is at it.
When MTV lost out on I Dumb For You and they were like, I was at a party once and somebody came up and said, I wish we would have bid harder on this project because it would still be alive because we would have done something with it. And they were like, let's have a meeting. Do you have any other ideas? Because we'll take any of your ideas. And I said, cool, this is, I love this. And I said, I have this idea. I'm just going to share it because it's never going to get made, ever. Maybe it will, who knows? But I had an idea for a show where we took everybody's, and it's not going to get made now because it's the future and it's easier now than it would have been like in 2010, 2011 to do this. We have a bunch of people show up. They give us their phones. They give us their wallets and everything. We give them copious amounts of alcohol. And then the next morning, they have to go across New York City with no money. They have to find a way to get from point A to point B in New York City. And if they do that, then they get like $10,000. Well, MTV budget would have been like $100 or whatever, because that was the thing about MTV was they'd have these game shows and the top prize would be $500. Yeah, it would be so. Or they'd be like, you can. And that was the thing was they were like, part of the reason the show didn't work was they were like, well, you'd have to highlight a musician every week. You'd have to like feature a song on your show for the breakups every week, and we could have like a breakup song or something like that. But that was the thing. Like there has to be some way we can sell an album from this after it's done, or there has to be something we can do that people will buy content or something after it's all said and done. So it's a lot. MTV is even still a lot different now. So, but
I didn't know that MTV was still a thing.
I
don't know where to find MTV.
Well, I mean, I think it's still, I don't know. I mean, it's still,
is it an app yet? Like, can I get the MTV app on my smart TV? Cause
it's probably an app. It probably is an app. You know what? That's true. What's up, Jacob? So sorry, everybody, by the way, Ben, I see you two in the chat room. I'm going to say hi to everybody in the chat that's saying hi to us in the different locations. So, but, yeah, I don't know what's going on. Like, it was funny because, like, MTV, VH1, they both started out as, like, music video places. And then VH1 essentially just became celebrity reality shows. And I think MTV's still doing, like, Big Brother stuff like that. Like, Big Brother shows.
So this is, I'm a TV freak. So, and I love MTV and VH1 and all that kind of stuff because I'm Gen X and it's right in my wheelhouse. MTV, originally, VH1 was supposed to be for the older brothers and sisters of the MTV generation. It was supposed to be a little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more young marrieds, if you will, were the target demo for VH1. But they found that there was just too much crossover with the MTV pop music. Music wasn't that, you know, broken down at the time. So they went, we're just cannibalizing each other with the same artists. So that's when VH1 said, okay, we're going to start creating shows. And the first thing that VH1 created was Behind the Music. And that became such a phenomenon that VH1 went, you know what? Yeah, go ahead, MTV. Because they were brother and sister networks. They're the same company. So VH1 was like, okay, we're going in this direction. And yeah, they never looked back, did they? They stopped playing video almost immediately.
And that's the thing is, videos aside, I think the greatest contributions from VH1 is Behind the Music. And from MTV is Unplugged. Like, I would say the biggest contribution for me growing up was MTV Unplugged, because I was like, oh yeah, let me listen to Soul Asylum, and they've got a violin section for somebody to shove. They've got violins or whatever coming out.
No doubt. Yeah. I think that's one of the greatest things in MTV's history, the Unplugged series. I think the most socially impactful thing that MTV ever did was reality TV. The Real World.
Big Brother. Yep.
Real World was the first.
Real World. That's what I meant. Real World. Yeah.
Everything, the success of reality TV, everything that we have today, you go back to the origin story of The Real World, New York, 19.
I remember.
I think.
I remember that guy. God, I can't remember names of people, but I remember when that guy dragged that girl across the floor in her towel.
Kevin.
Like, she was Kevin. She was
naked. No. Wait, you are talking. That happened in San Francisco, right?
Yeah. So I don't think it was Puck that did it. No. But it was somebody. It was somebody. Like, Puck came in, and Puck was like the first, like, yeah.
Trouble.
That's Puck. Now everybody's like that. But I remember that guy, the girl was like naked in her bed or whatever. She didn't have clothes, like she implied she didn't have clothes on. And the guy dragged her across the thing. And I remember them voting him out of the house and saying,
yeah,
you have to leave the house because you did this.
He was a black young stand-up comedian. And I think his name was, maybe it was Kevin. I don't know, whatever it was. And the girl that he did this to was a white girl. And it was so, I mean, boy, 2024 eyes need to watch this because it was very, I don't know, black man being punished for speaking to a white woman. It had that vibe on it because he didn't do what he was being accused of. He was being accused of being, really, they were just roommates having a fight, but they, because of, you know, TV, they turned it into like, I'm traumatized. It was so silly. It was, I felt bad for that dude, but yeah, he never, you know, no career for him.
It's so, and it's so weird to like look at like even like early American Idol and stuff like that. Cause I remember not hearing about American Idol till the final episode of American Idol. And just knowing that Kelly Clarkson is where Kelly Clarkson is and Justin is the Dr. Pepper guy. like just stuff like that. Just looking at like people who we idolize now that started out on like American Idol, like Miranda Lambert started on American Idol, right? No, Carrie Underwood. Carrie Underwood started on American Idol because she was the one that's like, my daddy's in prison and blah, blah, blah. And I remember that, you know, those stories. And now that was the other thing. That was the other
Jennifer moment. Hudson has an Oscar. I mean, the American
That was Oscar the other people. Moment in my life because my friend, I have a friend, he's a comedian, Dennis Hurley. He's been on shows like Superstore and these other shows or whatever. He's in the Justin Timberlake video for Can't Stop the Music or whatever it is. And one day he was like, hey, come in because I'm playing one of my characters on America's Got Talent. And I came in to see him play one of his fake comedian characters, like this older gentleman who like gets nervous and throws up in the middle of his routine because they wanted a bad person. Bad thing. And then that moment I was like, oh my God, not even America's Got Talent is real. It was my last hope. I mean, there's still, but also I saw when I was there that day, I saw some guy from YouTube and Alex Mandel was somebody who I met because I ended up being on Periscope for a long time, and Alex is Howie's son. And this guy from YouTube who just like fell onto a mattress full of like glass or something like that. That was his bit or whatever.
Good bit.
And then, that was his bit. And then they like sent him to Hollywood, and Howie was like, well, I love your videos. I watch them all the time. And I'm like, oh, this is just one of Alex's friends that he just put onto the, he just went through. And that was the first moment. And then I saw Dennis perform as Herb, and that was the other moment. And I was just like, oh my God, America's Got Talent. Nothing is, I mean, I'm still good to go. So the only thing I believe, and you can question me, the only thing I truly believe that nobody knows is The Masked Singer. I don't watch The Masked Singer a lot, but I truly believe that The Masked Singer is a surprise for anybody who's, when they're guessing the people on The Masked Singer. That's the only one I believe is a real show to a point. Except when Kermit came on, and Kermit was the in disguise. That was a very weird.
I don't like that show. I would never watch that show.
You would never watch Masked Singer?
Seems too Japanese to me. It's
very much Japanese. I think
I
so.
Like it. It's like it's being crammed down our throats. It's like, look, for years we've known Japanese has had the world's craziest game shows, right? And it's never never came here really to any extent, but now it just
feels because they're not gonna show people whipping some guy until he pees with bamboo sticks or whatever.
This is the slippery slope. It starts with The Masked Singer, and then it's, you know, genitals in a vice game
and
show.
That was early. I'm going to tell you, that was early me public access show. There was one time, and this guy's very successful now. I won't even say his name, but he's very successful, and he's hates the fact that I have this video that I could play at any time because I have all the old videos from all the old episodes of my public access show. But there was this guy who's, when he was younger, he was a friend of my brother's, and he was desperately wanted to be on my public access show, and he kept bugging me about it. And I said, if you let us tape you duct tape you to a board and you let girls in their underwear tickle you until you pee yourself, then I'll let you come on the show. And he did it. And he did it because I was just trying to do something shocking. It worked because this woman, that was the first time ever that the city attorney had to come in. And he said, because the city ran public access and the city attorney came in and he said, I remember it because I was like, oh no, this is going to be bad. This is going to be bad. I'm sitting down at the desk and he goes, so I watched this when it was happening live. And so there's nothing wrong. You didn't hold, like this woman had complained and said, I was holding him against his will and I was forcing this upon him and all this stuff. And the guy, and the city attorney, who turned out to be a fan of the show, was like, no, I was watching the show when it was live and this, you're fine. Like, oh, I had to review the video. He goes, the worst part is the city council had to sit there and watch your show. And two of the city council members don't watch your show. So that was the only thing we had to explain stuff to him. So, but it was a good time. That was the only time that there was ever a really shocking.
So nobody was harmed, but
nobody was harmed. But
sounds like you made some pretty clear fetish porn, though.
I think so. And I think the only harm is that him and I aren't necessarily friends anymore. That isn't from that. That's just from other. That's from life in general. And
that's your story.
Fading apart. But I think it's funny because I have just a box with all these mini DV tapes of every single episode of the show. And that was one. There was another time where I had two girls, and it was St. Patrick's Day, and I had these girls wrestle in, like, Lucky Charms. Because I was like, let's do Lucky Charm wrestling because it's St. Patrick's Day. And the father of one of the girls reached out to me about 2 months later, and he's like, can you take that off of rotation? Because my daughter is training for the Olympics, and we don't want that. And I think she went on to be in she went on to do gymnastics in the Olympics or whatever. So good for her. But that was it. I took it off. If anybody ever said, this is going to hurt my career, I would never, ever do anything that was going to hurt anybody's career because I wouldn't want anybody doing that to me. But it was just very interesting that.
Well, that's just what a decent person would do.
Right.
Somebody.
I think this guy thinks that I'm going to somehow bring out this video.
Right.
There was one other video where I was going out with the co-host, which was my first mistake because I had several co-hosts throughout my career. And I started, this girl came on because we were doing this thing where you could date the intern. So this girl comes on to date our show intern and we all go out afterwards. And then she's like, no, I really want to go out with you. And then we start making out. And I was like, this is a better option. I like this option a lot better. Yeah. So we started going out. And so we were going out. And I said, I don't want her to be the co-host anymore because we're going out and guys would call on the show and they'd be pervy and whatever. So I found this other girl to be the co-host and I just brought her in and I said, and she goes, I thought I was a co-host. And I said, you know what? And she was very skinny, very scrawny. I said, why don't you girls arm wrestle and the winner can be the co-host, knowing that this other girl was going to win. And then it just turned into she won. She won, and my girlfriend was like, I can't believe we did that. And it was just ended up being, because it's live television, it just ends up with me. I did half an hour of the show under my desk and brought up a monkey puppet and just did the show because I couldn't. And then she finally walked out because she was mad at me or whatever. But that was some good television. There was some good live television moments where, like, one of the co-hosts, her mom was calling the show, and her mom said something to me, and I go, God, way to be a bitch. And I hung up on her, and the girl screamed at me and got up and walked out during the middle of the show. That was some good television too. There's a lot of good there's a lot of good moments, a lot of good co-host based content. Do you ever have those good moments on your, a little bit more tame probably on radio, but
yeah.
I mean, did you ever have anybody, I don't know if you can ever say this or not, but did you ever have anybody that was a part of the show that you realized, I don't want this person to be a part of the show?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I fired lots of people. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. I've never been involved. I've the bulk of my show, I mean, the greatest success that I had was with a female partner, and she was a very vivacious and very sexy and very Every guy was like, oh, yeah, she's so hot. What's it like working with her? And I'm like, you know, we've known each other since we were both producers together at the same station. We, you know, we're like brother and sister. So, no, I've always had a rule. I don't consider the radio station where I work to be anything other than the place where the microphones are. I tend to get the hell out of there and don't socialize with those people. Like around the office and the water cooler and all that, not because I'm a standoffish guy. I'm not that at all. I'm actually a really fun guy. It's just that, you know, those are places of business. And I'm the guy, you know, we'll go down the street to the bar and we can all hang out, you know, but I don't really, there's no, like, I wouldn't be hitting on interns because I didn't really spend a whole lot of time around them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I quickly changed after that. That was an early time in the season. And that was another thing where, like, the co-host later on became like my little sister sort of scenario with stuff like that. And it would always be the same thing. Like, I'd have a girl come on to be a co-host. I'm like, are you okay with all this? And they'd be great. And then they'd be single when they start, and then they'd start dating some guy, and the guy would tell her to stop doing the show because they didn't like. We had a lot of
girls gonna stop doing a show.
They did. They would really? Stop because they were like, yeah. Oh, like, wow. The best thing that ever happened was the Johnson County Jail had a thing where it was like a collect call thing, and I said, if anybody ever calls from the Johnson County Jail, because they only got 5 channels in the Johnson County Jail and public access was one of them. So they started calling in, and I said, I always accept the charges. I will always take the charges for the Johnson County Jail, and I will pay for them because I want these calls to come in. And we actually had one guy who was on a hunger strike at the Johnson County Jail for, he was accused of kidnapping, and he was on a hunger strike, and he hadn't kidnapped the girl or whatever. And he was a fan of my co-host, and he called in. And this guy had refused doing interviews with everybody. And he did the interview right there on my show. And then it was great because all these, like, Cedar Rapids, Iowa cities, all these different newspapers had to quote my show. Because I was the one that they could not get an interview with this guy. He was doing a hunger strike and everything. And it was fantastic. It was good. But that was the thing was, a lot of them would just quit because their boyfriend or girlfriend would be like, or their boyfriend would be like, nope. You can't do this anymore because I don't like them.
Well, I had a very business relationship with my female partner, who I love like a sister, but it was very business. It was non-sexual. Now, the girl that you heard that I was doing the fill-in stuff at the Freak with, that's Sybil. Now, Sybil is another one who people are – Sybil is gorgeous and has been gorgeous, and she's sexy and vivacious, and she's a knockout, and guys have been chasing after her for 20 years in this town. She's got a giggle, and everybody loves her. She's the most adorable thing ever. But Sybil to me, and everybody, you ever hook up with Sybil? You know, you get these guys. It's like, yep, I don't know what yep. goes on in radio. Sybil is like my little sister. I've always looked at her as my, as just a family member, as somebody that, I mean, it was hard keeping, there were a lot of dudes that were really creepy around her and Kelly. Yeah. Kelly could handle it a little bit different, but it's, and Sybil could handle
that's
it.
Just, that's, and I just people felt more don't protective seem of to Sybil. Realize it. Yeah. I don't think people realize it. And I think I'm more self-aware from being in radio and stuff like that, but there are times where, and I hate saying this because there's been times where I like been out at a Freak event and had to tell somebody to calm down, because there's sometimes people get like they know somebody so well because they listen to the radio all the
it's
time
one-sided.
Yeah, it's very one-sided, and they grow this relationship with this individual, and I've had that experience where I had weird stalker things from doing radio and stuff like that, and public access and all that stuff. But I see it in people where they'll get mad at somebody because of something they said on the radio, and they'll hold a grudge for somebody, or they're super saying creepy, gross things about a female person on the show or whatever like that. And they're at a live event, and I'm thinking, I think this person thinks he's going to show up and get a date with this individual or something like that's going to happen. It's very self-aware then.
I believe 7 out of 10 guys are creeps, and they don't.
Yeah. Realize. Oh yeah. Yeah.
7 out of 10 dudes are just creepy as hell, and they don't realize it.
You know what though? I will hold that number fairly high for women, for female Listeners too. I'm sorry. I will hold that number high for. There was a lot of very interesting female interaction that I had, and in the early days I was like, this is great. I love this. And then like,
Are you talking about sexually aggressive women?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So that's different than being a creep. So I don't think there's a female version of a creep. That's there can be an aggressive, you know. A creep is a guy. I mean, how do you explain what a creep is, too?
Yeah, no, that is true. I get it. I get what you're saying.
A creep doesn't have to be sexually aggressive. A creep just stands in the corner and stares at you.
A creep is the old man who, like when I was making the jokes about dating Lacey or whatever, mm-hmm. there was a moment where I was like, I'm pulling back because I'm self-aware. And I feel like this sounds creepy because she didn't know who the hell I am, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I pulled back a little bit, but then I talked to her and it was fine. So we had a conversation about it. But the thing was,
cool.
Yeah, she is cool. She gets the bit. And that was, for me, it was like, this is a funny bit. We could end up doing like a live stream date sort of thing. Like I'm thinking of content the whole time. Like, let's do that. That'd be great. But yeah, that's, I mean, there are people that are just like, they get angry or they get frustrated or all that other stuff. So were you flashing me because you're ready to go, or was that just a random, you held out something up?
I would never say I was ready to go. No, just
okay.
A text from my son. We do homework and he's just waiting, that's all.
Okay, well I get that. Well, I mean, I want to make sure that I didn't take up all your time tonight, so I want to make sure. I'm a comedian, so when I see the light, I'm thinking, "Oh, is my time up?" That's what I saw the light flash up. So
I apologize for that. It was my phone, and I wanted to make sure it wasn't going to make a noise and interrupt this. And look at me, I interrupted it even worse.
No, you did. It's funny. It makes for good content. I like that. So, but the other thing is, I feel like there's a friendship here. So I feel like there's going to be numerous times where we can talk other, well, maybe not. Maybe that was me being a one-sided fan because you just gave me a weird look. Like, what do you mean friendship?
No, so, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, yeah, so. Invite me back. I got
you. Oh, I would love to have you come back. I would, like, please watch my movie at some point. Don't watch it till, it's supposed to go out on Tubi, like, either the end of the week or next week. Don't watch it on YouTube. Watch it on Tubi, because once it's on Tubi, people were getting anxious because I was using a streaming platform that was taking forever. A distribution platform that was taking forever. So I just put it on YouTube so people would shut up. And then I took it off. I'm going to take it off YouTube once it goes up on Tubi.
Well, send me more information. I'm not all that up to speed on everything, but I would love to.
I will send you that. And like I tell everybody, I want to tell everybody this before I let him go too, is that make sure to check out bradman.tv/blog because I started a daily blog. Sort of for mental health purposes, but also because I made a bucket list because my 50th birthday is this year. And my 50th birthday is on 9/24 of 9/24 because September 2024 is also 9/24. So it's this magical number.
All right.
9/24/24. Yeah. It's my 50th birthday. I've had a lot of great experiences in my life. I'm trying to get Collective Soul because I hung out with them for a while back in the day. I'm trying to get them to come and play a song. I'm working on that. I want them to perform. I want Lisa Loeb to come in because I worked with her for a little while in my life. Just a random potpourri of just different things. And I made a bucket list. I made a bucket list of a bunch of stuff I want to do. And so everybody should check out that list. And that's at bradman.tv/blog. Mm-hmm. I want to share it with you because I want to see what you think of my list at some point.
Okay.
Check it out. Please do check it out. But anyways, Pugs, where can people find you at?
Well, for the time being, every day at High Noon, 12 p.m. Central Standard Time, you can find me. I do a show called The High Noon Rant. It is a two-hour stream of consciousness rant on all the day's headlines, hot topics, current events, buzzworthy subjects, whatever it is that's happening in the world. I do it at High Noon, me and a microphone and all the stuff that you need to know about this day. Non-politically divisive, conversations, talk the way I think talk radio should sound. You can find that at pugscast.com. Hit subscribe and it'll let you know when the show comes on at noon. That's a shortcut to the YouTube page, Pugscast.
YouTube page, gotcha.
Yeah, it was, you know, when we first started 2.5, we've been doing it every day for 2.5 years, Monday through Friday. When we first started it 2.5 years ago, when you went to Pugscast on YouTube, you had to rifle through hundreds of dog tribute pages and people who love Pugs dog. So Pugs Cast will get you directly to the page, and I'd love to have you all check it out. Monday through Friday, 12 p.m., High Noon Rant, 2-hour stream of consciousness, uninterrupted current events rant.
And it makes me jealous because I literally have to have somebody to bounce off of. Like, if it's not people in the chat room, it's like, it's got to be a live person talking to me. I have to have somebody to bounce off of in order to go for that long.
So. Listen, I've always worked with teams and ensembles. And if you go to that pugscast.com page and scroll all the way back to the first, second, or third video, you will see the evolution of me doing the stream of consciousness rant. And you will see the first day I did a show by myself. So, I didn't think I could do it. I didn't think I wanted to do it. And I have to tell you, now I think I prefer it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's the motivation. That's the motivation. So, I loved having you on. I
love hope being here. Thank you. How kind of you to invite me. Thank you.
Well, I'm a fan. You got a fan out of me because I'm just I felt like we had similar trajectories on stuff. And that's why I was kind of like, oh, I like him because he kind of reminds me, like when you were doing radio and I heard you doing radio, I was like, that's how I used to do radio. And I like, that's why I like it more, because I felt like it was that same school of radio thought or whatever. So that's when I was really, just from the beginning, I was a fan of you. So there you go. Love you. And I love the stuff that you have to say. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah, you got a compliment out of me too. So, I'm gonna let you. I'm gonna put you down. If you had to leave, go ahead and leave. But if not, I'll say goodbye to you after I'm done with this. So thank you, Pugs, for being on the show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today and listening to the show. If you're watching this on replay, I'm sorry you're watching this on replay. You're too lazy to come in and watch us on Wednesdays. We're live at 8 p.m. Central Time. You can check us on various different platforms. You can go to thissuckybroadcast.com, which I just realized I was so busy today, I didn't actually put Pug on the website yet. I'll do that when I get done with this. So by the time you're watching this, Pug's on the website. There you go. Take that. And that's it. That's the show for today. I will be back next week with another installment of This Sucky Broadcast. Thank you to my sponsors. Thank you to Pug for being on the show. And guys, have a wonderful day. Just enjoy yourself. Do amazing things. Check out my blog, bradman.tv/blog, and just check out the stuff I'm doing there. I'm just very excited to have you guys on. Listen to me, follow my life, and join me for the next year, because I think this next year is going to be pretty amazing. And I just enjoy doing this stuff, so I really do just appreciate you guys. Thank you.
You've been listening to This Sucky Broadcast. Learn more at thissuckybroadcast.com.